From Valley Public Radio, you're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. Today on our show, we meet the new UC Merced Chancellor, and we hear from a family of mariachi singers. Plus, teenagers tell us how they're getting through the pandemic. But first, this week, the staff at Kaiser Fresno Medical Center said goodbye to Sandy Oldfield, a nurse at the hospital who died of COVID-19 after treating an infected patient. On Wednesday evening, hundreds gathered for a candlelight vigil to honor her memory. I spoke with one of the organizers of the observance, registered nurse Amy Arland, who works in the ICU. Thank you so much for talking with us today. To start out, I'd love for you to share a little bit about Sandy. What was she like and what kind of nurse was she?
Sandy was a telemetry nurse. She started off at Kaiser doing many different jobs at the time that I met her when I first moved to California. In the early 2000s, she was an LVN at that time. And that's kind of where I grew up. And she was an excellent mentor, very kind, compassionate person. I transferred to the ICU after a year on the telemetry floor, and I have not worked with Sandy much since then. My experience with Sandy over the last 2 months has been as an observant nurse watching the care being given to her in our intensive care unit by her coworkers.
And what was that experience like?
It is truly terrifying to face your own mortality because it's very much like Russian roulette. As a nurse, knowing that this pandemic was coming to our area, we kind of knew that some of us were going to get sick. It was just kind of who has to be the unlucky one. We had a total of 10 nurses that contracted the virus. Some of them did have to be hospitalized. Others still, after well over a month, are not well. Some of them have returned to work. And unfortunately, Sandy was the one who was hit with the worst case scenario of this virus, which we keep hearing hits only a small percentage of people. But to watch it be one of your own sisters, one of your longtime colleagues, to have to be on the receiving end of the care that we have to give to these people to try to keep them alive. And I think it is a testament to our excellent nursing care that as many other patients would have been expected to die from this very early on, as bad as it was, that we were able to give her every opportunity to survive this for over 2 months. So it has taken its toll on our entire hospital staff. Like I said, she was so lovable. You know, the janitors knew who she was. The care partners knew who she was. People in the clinics knew who she was. Everyone knew who Sandy Oldfield was. And her loss has just left a vacuum. And like I said, it's also very tough to have to face your own mortality in the way that every time we would have to enter that room to take care of her, we were putting ourselves at risk if we weren't careful, because we don't know enough about this disease to guarantee that we're not going to spread it to others or to bring it home to our families.
How has this experience changed your feelings or your concerns about your own personal safety and the safety of your family when you come home from work after a shift?
I think the hardest personal struggle I have had is being a nurse now for, gosh, my 20th anniversary will be next month. To be able to have to struggle internally with the thought of, is there a line that it's just too far to cross? At what point will I reach the decision where I'm going to have to say, no, I can't take care of this patient because you don't have the stuff that I need to be able to keep myself safe. So many nurses are very heroic by nature and altruistic and are willing to run into that room of a highly infectious patient to save their life if they are dying without even thinking about their own protection first. That's just who a lot of nurses are at heart, and I thought that's who I was. But it became a struggle for me when we found out that the maximum protection that we had agreed to use from the beginning, we had what we thought was the optimum protection, the right masks, goggles, gowns, gloves, foot covers, head covers. We were fully covered from head to toe just because you don't know what you don't know. And we did not know enough about this virus in mid-March to be able to say for sure how it was being transmitted and whether or not we were at risk of spreading it to our patients. So we were extremely cautious and used the highest standards that we had in our possession. And just within a matter of the first couple of weeks is when the relaxed CDC guidelines came out, and our employer immediately adopted them, which meant that the very high standard protections that we had agreed both with union representatives and management representatives was what we were going to provide our employees quickly was taken away from us because the CDC guidelines just were not even close to what we were using. So the nurses felt very stripped of protection, and that just increased the fear and the anxiety, the frustration of having to make these decisions every day, you know, whether or not the stuff that I'm being given to do my job, is it enough for me to keep going? We have had some nurses that have decided to quit during this and possibly even leave nursing altogether. We have had some nurses that are older nurses in their, you know, 60s that also have health problems and made the decision that they needed to retire earlier than they had planned.
Where are you at in your feelings about going to work every day? And what kind of protocol have you developed at home to keep your family safe?
Wow. I guess where I would describe myself is kind of at a crossroads. I haven't made a decision yet how much farther I'm willing to go when it comes to taking away the very protection that I need to make sure that my family stays safe. As far as isolation protocols, I received a phone call on March 8th. I remember the day, and it's probably, you know, like some of those very traumatic events that happen in people's lives. I don't think I'm ever going to forget that day, that I got a personal call from our chief nurse executive who knew I was very passionate about infectious disease protocols in our hospital and said, you know, we have our first patients coming in that could potentially be positive. Would you be willing, since you're on the task force, to set an example for all of the other nurses and volunteer to take care of this patient, which I more than gladly did. I had already been through all of the training. I felt very confident that I was going to be able to take excellent care of this patient and protect myself and my coworkers, and I had everything I needed. I was raring to go. I got sick on March 13th. The only way I can describe what I felt in that moment. Now, mind you, the patients that I was taking care of are what we call PUIs. That means they're under investigation. They're suspected of maybe having coronavirus, but it hasn't been proven yet. So we treat those patients as if they were positive for the virus until we have test results proving otherwise. So for the first 5 days, I was immersed in it. I was volunteering all over the hospital to take care of these patients wherever they cropped up because we really weren't sure where we were going to put them. They needed special isolation protocols, and that meant special rooms equipped with the right ventilation systems, and those rooms are spread out throughout the hospital. So we were still juggling with where to put them, so I kind of just went where the patients were. To be sick on the fifth day after my very first exposure made me full-on panic. I started tracing my steps back, thinking, where had I been? I had just been out of town for a union business trip. And I started to think about all of the people I had had direct contact with within that time frame. I hate to be crude, but it was almost like waiting on test results for an STD. I actually sat down. I had to make a list for myself of everyone that I could possibly think of that I had had any contact with in the previous 14 days to think that where did I pick it up from and did I take it to work with me and did I make my patients sick? I could have given it to anybody and I was afraid that I was the one spreading it and then wondering if I would be in that 1% of people that got hit very hard with this virus and died. So my family and I gathered and we had a family meeting with my grown children who were staying here in the house with me at the time, my husband and my youngest, who is 9 years old. And then we have a friend that lives with us part-time. And we discussed it, and I let them know point blank, you know, here on out, mom's going to be taking care of these people directly, you know, the sickest of the sick. And there's a very good chance that I might get sick, but there's an even worse chance that I might bring it home by accident. So we need to talk about whether or not it's going to be feasible for me to stay at home and somehow keep a distance, or whether I was going to need to move out of the house for a while and maybe live in a hotel, or, you know, find a way to share an apartment with some other nurses, which is something I had heard people were considering. My family and I decided that because I do work so much and what little time I do get to be with my family is precious, that they wanted me at least to be in their presence. So we made a plan to divide up the house into my quote unquote quarantine zone and the house that the rest of the family would use. And then my grown children, their father also lives here in Fresno with us close by. And so I had to discuss this also with my ex-husband and his family to decide if we were going to let our children go back and forth and visit anymore, and what that was going to look like if we actually were going to hardcore lock down 14 days of solid quarantine, which is what I was instructed to do. One of my children decided to stay here with me and the other one decided to stay with their dad to kind of even it out. And so my oldest child, which was my daughter, who decided to leave with her father, her and I have not had physical contact or seen each other face to face since March 8th. We talk on FaceTime and on the phone, and we text a lot. She's considered an essential worker, so she continues to go to work because that's the only income she has, and it's not enough for her to live on her own yet. So she stays with her parents. And it was difficult for me to support her to continue to go out to work because I didn't feel like it was essential. I would have done anything to have been able to protect her and shelter her and keep her at home like I was doing with the other two kids, but she had to make that decision for herself.
Right. And what were your test results?
I ended up having to be tested twice because in the beginning, the test results were inconsistent and it took a very long time for us to get the test results back. So I was tested negative. The first time it took about 5 days, and the second time it took 8 days to get the results back. It was torture.
I could only imagine.
But to wait 8 days to find out if I had the plague. And that just meant that my quarantine was, you know, extended that much longer.
So I have to ask you, what are your thoughts about communities reopening?
I understand that people need to get back to normal. Like I said, it's been, what, 72, 73 days that I've been in self-isolation with no physical contact with my family, hardly at all. So imagine that I'm in the same house while school is going on downstairs and my 9-year-old needs help with homework, but I have to do it from 6 feet away. And my 24-year-old who is trying to do college online, you know, needs mom's computer for something, but you can't touch my COVID computer.
Right.
So yes, that was extremely hard. And so as far as reopening goes, I fully understand with my whole heart how people need a sense of normalcy. I need it for our own mental health. We know from all of the reports that are coming out that spousal abuse is on the rise and child abuse is on the rise, and people are trapped at home with no outlet for their emotions and feelings and fears that they're having to deal with right now. And a lot of people don't seek mental help because they simply can't afford it or they don't have insurance that covers that. So for my own mental health, I would love for everything to be open. I need to go for a drive.
Right.
But as a nurse, what our community, I think, really needs to understand is the only way we can reopen in any incremental phases at all is if we have the hospital bed capacity to take care of the people who are going to get sick. It's not a matter of spread this around like peanut butter and some people are going to like it and some people aren't. Some people are going to be like my coworker, Sandy, who for some odd reason that we just still can't figure out, who is in the prime of their life, shouldn't die, but they do. And no matter what we throw at them, the hydroxychloroquine, the remdesivir, all of these, you know, miracle cures that we have heard about, we've tried them. And, you know, there's just no way to explain to anyone unless you actually come for a tour through an ICU what that looks like if you've never been inside of an intensive care unit, to have tubes coming out of every orifice, to have a team of nurses and respiratory therapists and nurse assistants have to flip you over on your belly, how uncomfortable you're going to be because you can't breathe and a machine's trying to do it for you. So you're going to fight against that machine because that's just your instinct. It's way, you know, your body doesn't want those tubes. So then we have to put you to sleep, and it's a deep sleep for a long time. So your muscles begin to waste because you're not getting up and moving and exercising. And yet another team of healthcare workers have to come in now with physical therapists to exercise your arms and legs because you can't. This goes on for weeks. And then we have to start feeding you through a tube. And then to have no personal dignity at all, to be able to live like a human being, to have clothes on and be covered because you're burning up with a fever and we have to bathe you in ice every hour, to not be allowed to have your family and your friends be there to comfort you and assure you that you're going to be okay. Those patients die in isolation. So I understand people's need to get out and be around other human beings and get life back to normal, because that's just what we need to exist and to be sane. But I don't have enough beds in my hospital for everyone. And that's the reality of it. None of our hospitals will have enough beds for everyone if they continue to open up without the proper protection in place, without making sure that we can massively test our population. Here in Fresno County, we've tested, 10%? I don't even think we've reached 10% yet of being able to test people. So that is a very small sample to even be able to gauge how many people are really sick in our communities. There could be people, entire families right now, that actually are infected with coronavirus, but they're too afraid to go out. They have no health care insurance. They would not be able to afford a visit to the emergency room to even find out, not to mention they'd be terrified to know that they have it, because who else have they been around? And they know how people are going to treat them because now they have this infectious disease. They're not going to be able to leave their home. They're going to be isolated and quarantined by the county, so they can't go to work. They can't earn a check. And that is terrifying for so many people that live here in Fresno. Sorry, it's a bit of a rant.
No, not at all.
What happens when a nurse gets no sleep?
No, this is such important and critical information. Thank you so much. On behalf of everybody who's listening, I want to say thank you. Thank you to you and to all of your colleagues for the work that you do every day to keep the community safe. I also want to say I am so sorry for your loss.
Thank you for affording me the time to share my story. I hope that there are people listening that take this seriously and know that your nurses love you all, and we want to keep you out of the hospital. We want you to stay safe and healthy, and please wear a mask when you're out and wash your hands. Those are the two most important things. I don't want to see a second wave. The first one was hard enough on us.